The film crickets are intended for mature audiences. Any guests on the film crickets do not necessarily share the same opinions as the film crickets.
Film crickets chirping about movies.
Yeah, that's it's time for the film crickets with Jay Fortier, Chris Martineau, and Melanie Howerton. On this week's episode, Melanie's out, but Jay and Chris are joined by Bradley Mellenbacher from the band Draco and the Malfoys. Jay, Chris, and Bradley review the 1985 American martial arts comedy film, The Last Dragon.
Stream being Rick James looking fool, he's killing.
Does it stand the test of time? Let's find out. Your film crickets are on now.
All right. Welcome to the film crickets, everybody. My name is Jay Fortier. We do a podcast where we talk about movies from 1980 to 1999, and we talk about how well they hold up today. I am along with my good friend, Chris Martineau. How you doing, buddy?
Good. Hello, Jason. What's happening?
All right, man. Melanie's out today. So, she'll be back hopefully next week. And, we'll miss her, though. And, and she dodged this movie. Did she miss it? I don't know. We'll never know, maybe.
Yeah.
But listen, we are honored today to have Bradley Mellenbacher, basically the guy who wrote the theme song for our show. So I'm so psyched to have you, man.
Yeah, it's really nice to be here. And I just want to say, I bet Melanie is out because she liked this movie too much that she wouldn't be able to talk about.
Yes. Just could not deal with the existential crisis of having to live in a world where you've already seen The Last Dragon.
Exactly. Definitely. Yeah. If
I could. Where do I go from here? Honestly.
Yeah. I'm done watching movies. Yeah.
Yeah, it's over. We've hit the end of the internet. We're at the restaurant at the end of the universe. We have seen The Last Dragon.
Indeed.
Oh my God. Oh boy, oh boy.
The TV just explodes.
Yeah, oh my God.
That's it. It's a sign.
Yep. So Bradley, before we get into it again, I said it before, big props to you for writing our theme song. I've always liked it.
Oh, thank you so much.
Since Jay, kind of reached out to you and you gave us like samples of different types of themes. This one, again, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I usually listen to like people talking more than music when I drive, which is strange, but it's not really normal. But they all have a theme song, and I do rank ours up with all the other ones. It's super catchy. I'm just thankful that we actually got something that sounds that good. So never got to talk to you before, and I appreciate it. So Draco and the Malfoys, though. So what's our deal here? Are we like wizardy fans, or what's the impetus behind the band name?
Yeah, so Brian and I started this thing in 2005 or so after meeting Harry and the Potters, who are a band from Boston. And we became friends with them and then just started, they were playing parties that we were playing, and just as a joke on them, kind of, and just to have fun, we decided to write songs from the perspective of the enemy of their band, because they wrote songs from the perspective of Harry Potter. And so we're like, we're going to be Draco Malfoy and be the Roddy Piper to his Hulk Hogan. And it's been almost 20 years now that we've still been doing it and playing conventions and libraries, toured a few times, several albums. It's been a blast.
You know, there's other types of bands too, right?
Is there a Hufflepuff band? Yeah. Is the real question.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Tonks and
All right.
There's the one that comes to mind.
Tonks is a Hufflepuff.
Tonks and the Aurors is from Ohio. And she's amazing. She's like the Bruce Springsteen.
Cool.
It's called Wizard Rock. It's been amazing. The people that do it with us are incredible. And it's been really wild because there's a big trans community and like it's a lot of people's first safe spaces. And the unfortunate thing that the author of those books has been saying, like just like watching everyone's some people kind of, well, we're not going to sing songs about Harry Potter anymore. And then other people are like, we're going to make every character in the series gay and just like mess with it. And like, we're just going to do what we want. And if they're the best people.
That's
kind of
neat. That's cool. That's a neat angle. I like that. That's fun.
You can also look at it as you can, you know how like sometimes there's such a big fan base of something that the group of fans own it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's right, just like
the material in a way.
Yeah. Music and everything have been, it's throughout history. It's just sharing stories, and we share these stories no matter what their origin. It's just something that we share together. So we're able to sing songs about them and have, you know, get together and just be together with someone that likes the same thing you like, and you have something in common, and that's all you need. But it's been good.
Right. And what I mean is, though, like instead of the trans community, sorry, there's a delay, I think.
Yeah.
Instead of like the trans community feeling like they can't like it because of J.K. Rowling, they could sit there and go, no, we choose to like the material anyway, besides you, like, you know, in spite of you.
Yeah.
You know? Once a thing enters my brain, it's mine to do with what I will, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Some copyright lawyers might have something else to say, but, you know,
whatever.
Yeah. however, a story lives in your head is how it lives in your head.
Cool. So we are embracing a community where we can all like the same thing, but now we had to watch The Last Dragon. So,
there's a community.
All right, so look, let's dig into The Last Dragon. That was our assignment this week. We usually start out with saying your history with the movie, and when was the last time you saw it? Is it something that's on high rotation? Is it a childhood memory? Is it something you're hanging on to? So that's where we kind of start with. Usually, at this point, I say my grandmother had a pirated copy, and I watched it when I slept over my friend's house. I knew this movie existed. I did not ever see it. I was never a big fan of kung fu movies to begin with. It really wasn't my thing. I give a lot of obviously respect to Bruce Lee and all of those things, and I know that it is a genre. You have to be into the genre. It's like watching Godzilla movies. Like, for example, I loved Godzilla movies back in the day because I don't know that I knew what I was watching, but if anyone watched recently, like a Godzilla movie from the 60s, like Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla, it was just on Comet. I was just watching it. These movies don't make any goddamn sense, like at all. And it's hard to get to watch the movies because they don't make any sense. But people that really dig it, like, just eat it up. Mm-hmm. And I just don't eat it up anymore. Right. So I think Kung Fu movies for me were always kind of that, like I could see what was going on. I just never latched on. The only Kung Fu I really liked was Big Trouble in Little China. Like, that was the only Kung Fu movie I was into.
Yeah.
Now I love Gung Fu and I like all the modern Kung Fu because it's more fun to watch, but I never got into that vibe. Right. So, certainly never, I heard the movie, never saw it. Didn't know it was, I don't know. Is this a parody? Is it a comedy?
Hmm.
Is it blaxploitation? Is it Asian-sploitation? I'm not sure. I didn't know about any of that. So that's my history. No history. Jason.
I was interested in it when I was a kid. I was like, I don't want to say 12, 13, maybe. Mm-hmm. Which is right on the time that it was like, it was almost like made for that age group.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, you know, I'll give you that. Like, because especially kids back then, movies that were made, like, I guess by a certain set of people that were for kids. It's like certain movie makers made movies for kids thinking that we're all like, I don't know, like, it's like almost like a 12-year-old. Like, geared
wrote the movie.
But hold on. It's like that, and the villain is cartoonish, like, you know what I mean. Like, if some people make a movie towards kids, like Goonies, it doesn't feel like this.
Okay,
you know what I mean.
I think so.
It doesn't have the same vibe. Like it's almost like they put a little extra effort in the making of the villains or the whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, but some people made a movie like thinking we're watching Saturday morning cartoons, and it almost felt this way at times today.
Okay.
Like while I was watching this, like it had that thing. So, all right. So I knew of it then. I saw it maybe on cable a couple times. I think I swear I've seen this. I think I saw it once in full, but then mostly bits and pieces.
Okay.
Cause like, and then not for many years, though stuff stayed in my head. Like, you know, like the glowing at the end.
No, oh, God.
The and the I remember her. I remember her standing with him at the club and showing him videos. And he was like, Chinese Connection. And like, he was doing all these things. Like, I remember that. And I remember a really long duration of DeBarge with Rhythm of the Night.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Just... And then again, we also have to be, before, you know, I promise we'll get to you, Brad. But the thing is, like, it was a Berry Gordy production.
Yeah.
And Motown, you know what I mean? So, like, it's not surprising if they're going to feature somebody and let them stay on camera for a while. Cause it's like, you know, I don't know if it's, if DeBarge was Motown, but I'm assuming.
Yeah.
I bet.
You know, so like, it's like, hey, let's sell some records while we're watching this movie.
Yeah, so, I guess.
It's a good tune. I love that tune.
All right, Bradley. So what's your deal? I'm sorry, so Bradley, is, Brad.
I've been using Bradley more often these days, okay, but Brad's enough. Also right. My name.
All right, well, we'll go with Bradley. So what's your deal? What's your history with this film? You brought it to us on a silver platter. So what's your deal?
It was my gift to you.
No, thank you.
Yeah. So this is probably one of my very first memories. I was probably five, and I definitely remember watching it. And the piece of the movie that I was like, oh, right, this is what I remember as a five-year-old. Just the real sense memory was when Leroy had Richie on his shoulders walking down the street. And like, that was like, oh, my God, I'm 5 years old at the stadium now. Or no, excuse me. It was at the Diamond Hill in Woonsocket.
Yes.
Okay. Over by the McDonald's.
Yeah. Okay. All right. The showcase.
Right around that same time, my brother Brian was a huge Prince fan, and another huge early memory is dropping off Brian and Dad at Strawberries so they could camp out overnight so they could buy Prince tickets, and I bought Mr. T's "Be Somebody" or "Be Somebody's Fool" on cassette. So that was. That was right around this time. And so then I haven't really watched it. I think I've just seen things here and there. And always had fond memories of the movie. It's like, is that as ridiculous as it looks? And and then when you guys asked me to do this, I was like, I thought Brian would have been here. So I was like trying to find something family wise, that, you know, tied him into it. And then, I watched it again. I'm like, yep, it holds up. I love this movie. The other thing that was interesting for me is besides Draco and the Malfoys, I've been learning Tai Chi and learning specifically it's a new form of Tai Chi called Tai Chi Fit that is easy to follow. It's kind of more like a Pilates class than a martial arts thing. But I've been really falling into Chinese culture and everything around it, like the I Ching and Bagua and learning Chinese a little bit. And so seeing this movie with this, like with Leroy Green, the main character, who is basically doing the same thing as me, like getting way too into this, wearing the rice hat. I don't wear rice hats.
Oh boy, that's a rice hat.
Oh, I don't eat popcorn with chopsticks. Yeah. That was amazing. But like the whole time I was just like, oh my God, like this is no, I'm so glad I'm watching this. Like this is me right here. And also I'm not that bad. And then other little things that like, it might just be because they're pulling from Kung Fu movies and it's all based on this stuff. But like, there's real stuff to what he's saying. Like the scene in the movie theater towards the beginning when Shonuff is like,
Hold on. Wait. Pause. There's a person in here whose name is Shonuff. Let's just reflect on that for a moment. Yes. Not Shogun. No. Show no. apostrophe N-U-F-F. Shonuff. All right. That's all. Continue.
Also known as Mr. Nuff.
Mr. Nuff, yes. Mr. Nuff.
But when he was in Leroy's face, like, and then Leroy just, what does he say? Actually, I wrote that.
Bruce Leroy.
The secret waits for the insight of eyes unclouded by longing. Those that are bound by desire only see the outward container. And Show Nuff or Mr. Nuff says, like, that's a bunch of mumbo jumbo. Mm-hmm. But I was like, wait a minute. I think that's the Tao Te Ching. Mm-hmm. And I looked it up and I found a Last Dragon website that like went into it and like found the translation. And it was actually a new translation of the Tao Te Ching that I hadn't seen before. And I really mm-hmm. liked it. And I was just like, boy, this is a nice movie. Getting me further. I was not expecting this to like inform my Taoist learning, you know, like,
You gotta wonder.
It did it.
Sorry, I can dig it. So let me do let me just do who made this movie and whatnot. And I have some questions about The Last Dragon. So, Last Dragon, 1985, rated PG-13. Why? Yep.
Not I think one of the first PG-13s too.
Was it? Oh boy, yeah, why?
I believe so.
Hour and 49 minutes. That's guys. Mm-hmm. That's too long. That come on. That's too long for this movie. Don't you think? It's a little long.
Could have used a couple more DeBarge songs.
who can't? So we have in New York City, a young man searches for a master to obtain the final level of martial arts mastery known as The Glow. Directed by Michael Schultz, written by Louis Venosta, starring Tamek Vanity. We've got two actors in here with one name. Christopher Murney, and I'm going to steal what would have been Melanie's thunder. Christopher Murney is from Narragansett, Rhode Island.
Hmm. Which one?
The boss with the Cyndi Lauper wife.
Oh, really?
What's
he's from
name?
Rhode Island.
Eddie Arcadian.
The arcade magnet, yep. Eddie Arcadian.
Yes. And then we have Julius Carey as Show Nuff. Faith Prince, as like I said, the Cyndi Lauper knockoff, Angela Varaco, Mike Starr, Jim Moody, so on and so forth. I can't think I'm missing anybody. Oh, Keisha Knight Pulliam is in this.
Mm.
She was on Cosby, if I'm not mistaken.
You're missing a couple.
But that's I am. What did I miss?
You're missing William H. Macy.
Oh, did you say William H. Macy? Yeah. I'm shocked.
Dude, I love
him. Yeah, he was right. He was so great.
You know why I forgot? Because I looked it up and I couldn't find him on the credits anywhere. Or how deep into IMDb, like how low on the list he was. Mm. But yeah, William H. Macy's in this. I forgot.
And it says listed as WH.
Oh, is it? Mm-hmm. Oh, I missed it.
And then the other one, I'm not sure. Oh, there's actually a couple. One is Chaz Palminteri is listed as Thug Number 2 or something like
that.
And
okay.
I didn't catch him. I haven't seen him yet. I bought this on Apple, so I'll let you know when I identify where Chaz Palminteri is.
Yeah. Chaz is that's the guy from Bronx Tale.
Bunch of Bronx Tale.
Okay.
Yeah. He's been in a bunch of stuff.
Took me a second.
But and then the little kid at the end is Ernie Reyes Jr., who was the stunt the kung fu double for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles early movies.
Oh,
that was
right.
him, and he was also starred in Surf Ninjas.
Okay, wow,
which is also a great movie. Yeah,
I don't never saw Surf Ninjas. Not gonna lie.
If you like this, you'll love Surf Ninjas.
And okay, I'm not gonna watch Surf Ninjas. So that'll be
next week on the film.
Yeah, right.
If you ever have me back,
I got a question here. He is referred to as Bruce Leroy. Am I not mistaken?
Did I miss that? Like his name is Leroy Green, but I think people call him Bruce Leroy. But like that's not his given name. Like they kind of establish his name as Leroy Green a few times, but then people just
right. And then I think people just saw his lifestyle and were like, "Hey, we're gonna call him."
Like if your name is Leroy and you're wearing a rice hat everywhere, like it's just gonna happen. Like
oh my god. So, you know, and this movie posits the scenario. It's like when you were younger, I was certain that quicksand was going to be more of a problem than it turned out to be in my adult life. And I, you know, it seems like marauding gangs of people that do kung fu were going to be a bigger problem than I had hitherto expected in my middle 40s. I have yet to be accosted by a roaming gang of people that do kung fu and chop up my pizza store with their bare hands. Our cardboard pizza store that's made out of cardboard, effectively, with their bare hands. So how good is Leroy Green at kung fu? Like, he can catch arrows and shit. Like, there's no one concerned with how good he is at the moment, at the beginning of the movie. It seems like there's no training montage. They're almost waiting for him to get better, but he's already an expert. Like, he's got really got no room to grow except to find the glow.
Well, it's his head.
Yeah.
But he already has the glow. Right? And
I think
he only glows at the end.
I know, but he already kind of already had the talent. He just didn't know he had the talent.
Well, yeah.
Kung Fu Panda cribs from this. Kung Fu Panda cribs from this quite a bit. Like, the fortune cookie is empty because you don't need the message because you already have the message kind of situation, right?
Yeah, the movie starts with his master saying, "You're done. I've taught you everything I can teach you. You need to, you have more to go, but you need to find it." I think that it kind of establishes like, and then he's also teaching kids. And so I think that's what it was establishing, that like, we already know everyone in town knows that he can kick Shonuff's ass. Shonuff doesn't like to hear it.
You know, but wasn't that impressed with Shonuff. I never saw any real skills.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You know what? I have a little bit of info on that. I don't have it. Like, I didn't look it up today, but I heard this in the past. They used him because he's 6'5".
Okay.
Yeah.
And they were just going for a large, menacing
big guy wrestler.
Dude.
Right.
But like, he was like, they also had to put the hockey pads on the inside because he had like no muscles. So like, he was fully
aware why he was wearing
that. He was
that.
Not that guy. Yeah, like they were okay, let's just make him look bigger. But like, you know, and we could also make it look like a fashion choice, but he was just a big, tall dude, you know, like, so they were let's do that.
So can I get, I'm wondering about the glow. So is the glow like the force? What is the deal? Like, where is the glow come from? I may have missed this, so I'm gonna defer to Bradley on this. Is the glow just something you have that you have to find, or what? This... Like, can you encapsulate the glow for me?
Sure. So they kind of took it in a very cartoony direction where I don't think any actual martial arts will say like my hands are going to glow, but you know, a lot of martial arts can be divided into external and internal martial arts. And internal martial arts deals with chi, which is just energy that flows through your body.
Yeah.
You can kind of explain it like, you know, sometimes you feel more alive than others. You know, sometimes you feel blocked.
Sure.
Sometimes it's easier to do things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's harder. And that just, you know, you can talk about chi. And there's a lot of qigong and tai chi deal with that, baguazhang, other things. And it's all about cultivating this energy. And as you do, you don't get a glow, but your hands do tingle. So it's sort of like your brain just talking to itself through the body. And when you feel alive and good, you kind of feel tingly and glowing. And so you don't can't actually shoot lightning out of your hands
or, I wouldn't think
or
so.
Anything like that.
Son of a bitch.
Damn it. I was
but
trying.
It is, you know.
I was this close.
I haven't. I've gotten tingly, let's get back I've never.
Who hasn't? So let's piggyback onto what Jay was saying before is that, you know, I'm watching this movie, right? And I'll be honest, I'm not digging it very much, right? But I'm watching it. I'm trying to get what I can out of it, right? And what Jay is saying before, and something I was thinking as I was watching him, like, who is this made for? Is this a kid's movie? Mm-hmm. Is this just a cheesy movie? Right. I've watched a lot of horror movies, particularly I watched Joe Bob Briggs' Last Drive-In. It's a lot of like crappy B movies, like drive-in movies. And after a while, like, they all have the same vibe. Like, this is just it's not garbage. I don't want to say it's garbage, but it has a vibe like a Godzilla movie. Like, this isn't very good. They're just trying to make something that's entertaining and campy. And we all know it's campy, and we're all kind of in on what this is all about. So Jay's point before is like, is it a kid's movie? I don't know that it's a kid's movie. I think it's more of in the idea of a campy horror film. Like, we're not going for excellence here. We're just going for a vibe. Then they definitely nail the vibe. There's no doubt about this. So maybe if we're talking about the glow and we're talking about Leroy making these good decisions based on what he has taught himself and what he's learned through his martial arts training, then maybe the glow is silly, obviously, but maybe it's kind of a primer into people that want to learn Tai Chi, right? It's setting that nugget that you had when you were 5 years old of, oh, this is what it's like, even though it's not. It's like Kung Fu Panda, like, and I don't mean to bring that up twice in 5 minutes, but it was a great movie, Skadoosh. But I'm just saying, like, it's all nonsense. It's talking animals, and Jack Black can make, you know, do ridiculous things as a magical panda. But it's the idea is there. It's finding your center. It's being the most you can be. It's finding the meaning to what is important to you. Now, I may have just given this movie more credit than it deserves, but maybe that's what it's going for. I don't know.
There are aspects that I was following, like, that I was interested in. Like, you know what I mean? Okay. It wasn't like, you know, someone vomited on the screen.
Right? It's not Killer Clowns from Outer Space, Jason. You're right.
I think it's a genre. It's playing with a genre. I'm not sure if it's a parody per se, but it's like a playful, and also mashing up Motown with black culture, and they play a lot with that, which is really interesting. No problem. I was just going to finish my thought of the three guys that run the fortune cookie factory. They are one of the only examples of like hip hop culture in the movie, like New York black culture. No one really, you know, like, the only time you see that is those guys. And then Leroy has to like pretend to like practice pretending to sound black in order to like, like get in there. And it was a really interesting, way to do that. And then they're playing dice and stuff. It was so silly. But the thing that really is interesting to me is
with hopscotch.
That was funny.
Like,
I didn't expect that.
You know, when you think of things like the Wu-Tang Clan,
Just gonna bring that up.
Like, I think Berry Gordy probably might have seen like the fact that a bunch of black kids loved kung fu movies, and I was like, I'm gonna make them a movie. That's my audience was like a 12-year-old RZA, which totally makes sense because
That's what I was wondering about. Like, how much did I know Wu-Tang? Obviously, they rap about the kung fu movies they would see where they're from. I'm wondering how much they enjoyed this.
I think they've talked about it. I don't know about like in lyrics and stuff, but I had poked around and I think I saw like RZA mentioning it here and there.
Okay, not that's fun.
So,
mention, Jay, go ahead, make your point before I go. I'll remember mine. Go.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to the year before, which I believe is
right.
So the year before, wow. You all right?
Yeah. The mustache caught in my freaking,
that's a good
tab of my soda. Ow. All right. Sorry. Go ahead. Sorry about that.
No, that's fine. In 1984, which I'm sure is the year that, Miami Vice came out. Miami Vice was sold to the network as MTV Cops.
Yeah, sure.
Meaning, let's put out a cop show, incorporating the pop culture of like MTV and music, and get this particular group of people in to the show. So that was not unheard of at the time. That like, let's do like, so I can see how it's almost like this movie said kung fu or karate is really, really popular because like when it was already pretty popular throughout the 70s, like, you know, Bruce Lee or whatever,
Everybody was kung fu fighting, Jay.
Right. No, but Karate Kid came out in 84 as well, right?
Yeah.
Huge, enormous film, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody went nuts. It made it like everybody had a group of people that knew karate, or there's a group of bad guys that are karate, you know, like, so, and then other types of movies started to come out as well. Now this movie comes out, it follows that and says, okay, let's add music, like, you know, like music video type stuff, you know, like the MTV aspect, you know, the whole thing. Yeah. She's like a video countdown specialist, vanity. Yeah. All right. And on TV and the whole nine yards. Then the last thing is breakdancing was still popular at the time, you know, just hadn't gone out yet in 85. So that's incorporated a lot in the movie. Like, you know, like, for instance, the little brother at the end is he can't just get out of the ropes. He's going to breakdance out of the ropes.
Yes, of course.
You know, like, or even the little Asian kid that's kicking ass.
Yeah. Ernie Reyes Jr.
Right. So he's the one that's, you know, he's doing, you know, he's doing the kicks and he's like doing the moves at the end, you know? So it's gearing toward, and that's what makes me think of, like, it's like a child's movie. You know what I mean? Like, you know, not that it's necessarily geared towards kids 100%, but I think all those little campy things that got woven in.
Yeah.
Like, it was like the perfect audience. Even I don't care if it's PG-13, 12, 11, 12, 13, you know, those, that was like a wheelhouse in my opinion.
And I will piggyback on what you're saying by saying that the movie in and of itself, the stakes aren't very high.
Yeah.
Like there's not, the stakes aren't high. Like they kidnap somebody because they won't play their music video. And then they hire the weird, like cartoony hockey padded, bad kung fu guys to fight at the end till eventually somebody's hand glows. I mean, the stakes aren't very high. And at no
Mr.
point
Nuff has no motivation.
Right. And at no point did I feel anybody was going to be murdered, maybe beat up.
Yeah.
Like I didn't think anybody was ever going to get burned or stabbed or shot or
their
face might've been bitten off by piranhas at times, but.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah. I forgot about the piranhas. Sorry. Because that's what happens, you know, they like, do that. Even entire ham legs.
Death was brought in to the picture as far as a thing, like, because the Cyndi Lauper lady shows up and says he's going to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know, but
no. I'm not like overly defending it. I'm just saying, like Chips. In Chips, they've never pulled out their guns.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
there was a good there's a good 30 seconds that Vanity and Richie thought that Leroy had, you know, caught the bullet in the lethal sense. It was, you know, it was pretty obvious to us, but they seemed pretty sad about it.
Well, it's established early that Leroy is going to be fairly indestructible. I mean, he's catching arrows. Like, he's pretty much a superhero, like, right out of the gate. So I never thought he was going to be in a very much trouble at any point.
You mentioned, did you get the sense that he was good at this? And, in the montage at the beginning, I think they tried to, but I do know that what was his name? Timac, the actor, like they chose him because he is a skilled martial artist. Like he knew what he was doing. It wasn't like Shonuff. But I don't think they did a great job with the intro. Like there were like shots of him just like clicking chopsticks together. It's like, what's going on over here?
Yeah.
Like, what are you trying to show me that he really likes chopsticks?
I love these chopsticks.
Yeah.
I like the idea of a martial arts master shooting arrows at his student to see if he's ready. But like the idea of like, those actually have like sharp points. Like, so if he's this not is ready, why, you kill him.
This is why I mostly learn martial arts over Zoom.
just in case today's the day that they want to implement a bad lesson. No, but it's funny though. Like he shoots three arrows at him and the third one he catches, like the other one he's just hitting. You know, like in the throat, it's like, how did you know it was blue? And it's like, I don't know. I have all these arrows shooting at my face. Right? Like, so it's just kind of funny. And I do love the fact that the master, the original master, says, "I'm going to visit my mom." I'm like, wow, how old is your mom?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he already looks like an old man. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, yeah, it makes me think of The Simpsons when the mother of Mr. Burns is still alive and makes a phone call to him. And then, he still hasn't forgiven her for having that affair with President Taft.
It reminded me of the episode of SpongeBob when they're selling chocolate.
I'm just going to say that.
Yeah, yeah.
God damn it.
What? Is
your mother home? Chocolate?
Yeah.
Oh,
what are they selling? I remember when there were chocolate.
You got to say again, as much as, I mean, this movie is kind of ridiculous. It does have a foothold in the culture. I mentioned Kung Fu Panda steals from this.
Yeah.
Wu-Tang obviously plays an homage to any of this stuff. And goddamn, when Leroy shows up in that yellow and black striped jumpsuit, that is Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2, baby.
Absolutely.
I'm like, I don't believe I'm seeing this. I mean, it's the same thing. Yeah. But I mean, and so am I being a hypocrite? Kill Bill 1, Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2 is not realistic. It's comic book violence. None of that should happen. But Quentin Tarantino comes in saying that none of this is real. And we're going to make a new kung fu movie that's as ridiculous as those kung fu movies from the late 70s and early 80s, except we're going to put Uma Thurman in charge and we're going to have her do all the ultra violence, and we're going to make it even like creepier than normal. So am I being a hypocrite for not liking Last Dragon, but I really like Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2 because it's as silly. Like, it's really as silly. You know what I mean?
There's nothing.
I know I'm not calling myself a hypocrite. I'm like, where am I putting the line? Like,
well,
you know what I mean?
Think, you know, Tarantino kind of brought it back a little bit. You know, there's no like exploding heads or any crazy shit. That, like, there's no one glowing. Like, everything that happens, it's all kind of big and kind of. It's sort of like what Star Wars did with samurai movies. Just sort of like shifted it over. And that was pretty unreal too. You know, they're shooting lasers at each other. But one thing that I was going to say was that one future movie that I think riffed on this one was UHF. Towards the end of UHF, Weird Al is the Weird Al movie where he's it's like a takeoff on Rambo, and at one point, the Weird Al as Rambo catches a bullet in his teeth. And I think that it's from this. But then he takes it one step further and chews up the bullet and then spits out machine gun bullets.
Apparently, really pissed about it.
Oh, yeah, that's over here. Sorry about that.
That's all right. Yeah. No, that's fine.
Yeah.
It's great effect.
And then they come busting through the door.
Yeah. Like, catching teeth.
Are you podcasting in here? Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is this? Podcasting.
But I think, you know, you were saying before that you don't like Godzilla movies and you never really liked Kung Fu movies. And I think, like, it's, you know, that's just a matter of taste. And
sure.
They are being unrealistic and silly. And also, it's based off of theater that is not our culture. You know, it's
sure.
The like, our movies are based off of Western plays, kind of. Like, it's a development of that.
So
it's
let me go
kind of starting from a different place.
So let me go to you with this then. This is 84. Okay. And again, the vibe I get from this film, and so help me dissect it. Okay. It's not going to change my opinion, but help me dissect it a little bit.
Yeah.
I have mentioned before that, like, I've watched a lot of like drive-in horror movies, right? I'm getting a little sick of them because it's always kind of the same thing. I'm tired of people getting murdered and screaming and then special effects being bad. I'm just kind of getting sick of it a little bit. But it's always the people that love them love the vibe, right? It's this vibe, this old.
Or the
I don't
form,
care that it's
too.
Cheesy and old and over the top. Like, I dig the fact that this person that just got their head ripped off with a lawnmower looks like a plastic doll. Like, I'm into it. Like, you can't convince me otherwise. This movie kind of has that same vibe. Again, I'm not bagging on it. I'm just saying, like, it obviously is not top shelf special effects. It's not going to win an Academy Award for screenwriting and all that stuff, but it's a vibe. And you're digging the vibe, and you're into it, and I'm not going to take that away from anybody, even though I wasn't into it. But I love Big Trouble in Little China.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to figure out why. Like, if you dig, and you, like, Jay sort of liked it, kind of, and you really like it, and I didn't like it very much, then why do I will watch Big Trouble in Little China 5 times a year, and it's just as stupid. And the special effects aren't good. And it's basically a Western, but takes place in San Francisco Chinatown. And it's got over-the-top paranormal kung fu in it that can't possibly ever happen. Why am I going to give that a ringing endorsement? But Go Last Dragon is kind of, meh. Like, I don't get where I'm coming from. You know what I mean?
My guess, and this is just a conjecture here, is that Big Trouble in Little China is a better movie than The Last Dragon.
Oh, it is. But why it's just quicker, as stupid. Like,
there's no DeBarge, you know, like they don't just like cut this part of this movie really is Berry Gordy trying to sell records. Like he was.
Yeah.
Like,
okay. Before Bradley breaks down anything else, like about what you asked him, yeah. I do have a quick take on maybe why.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Big Trouble in Little China establishes magic right out the gate.
Sure.
And says,
yeah,
okay, you're in for this. Okay, so if you, you know, here's what you're getting. Mm-hmm. You're going to have some shit like popping out of people's hands. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Because it shows you in court with Egg Chen going
very
like,
small. Yeah.
You know, like, so it says, don't be surprised by the magic.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to deal with this shit throughout most of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy. You know, so that obviously, like, you know, there's other aspects. But that at least sets the tone right away.
Yeah.
This doesn't really, I mean, besides hearing about a glow, you don't see it until the end. So it's like magic.
By the way, magic.
You know, like out of nowhere.
By the way,
you
magic. Know, so,
right.
And also, like, it didn't really feel earned either. Like at the end, so at the end with, you know, basically Leroy is just like the big reveal, like the big moment, the big triumph is that he remembered that his master told him to look inside himself. He was like, oh, right. Yeah. I forgot about, oh, look at that. A glow. Like there was no real big leap. There was no real big step or anything. It was just sort of like, oh, wait, I remember that guy said that one time. I know what to do
the
now.
Training montage. Then, that's the training montage. Is when he's being drowned.
Yeah. So yeah,
it's for the same reason, definitely
a flawed movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, but same reason as a kid. Like, there's no reason in your brain that you can't use the force to levitate the remote control to your hand. Like, it should make sense. I just need to focus hard enough. Yeah, shit, it didn't work. I don't know. I guess it's weird. Like I. Obviously, it doesn't have the same chutzpah as Big Trouble, but
you know what though?
You know, I don't know.
I like aspects though that you know, like I wasn't expecting to like say, like, you know, I mean, there's stuff in it that I'm like, how cool is this that the parents aren't freaked by his behavior? Like they're actually like going,
I love the parents.
Know? Yeah, like they're like, you know what? Let him be. Like, he's being a good person. Like, you know what I mean? They're not,
he's into
they're
a
not
thing.
Saying you must act like one of us. Mm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, cause the brother, his younger brother's like, he's so weird. Right.
And
he's like,
so weird.
Hey,
yeah.
Let him be, you know, like, and it's just, I don't know. I kind of dug that because they were just, they were, I don't know, like very like, open-minded, you know, and versatile, like by allowing him to be that way. The fact that he shows up with chopsticks, hands it to the little girl, the little sister, you know, and it's just, I don't know, it's like a sweetness that I liked with that.
I mean, we're always on his side.
He comes into breakfast, mama son, papa son.
And I guess, and I guess that's my problem is that he doesn't have a lot of room to grow except for, like, having a relationship with Vanity, you know what I mean? Like them, like liking each other. Yeah. Like, he's got nowhere to go. He already comes in with his skill set, and he kind of already has his moral center. It's not like he has to figure it out, except for finding the glow, which he already has.
Though,
so I, Yeah, go ahead.
I think also, I mean, one of his issues is, like, he seems to struggle when to, like, use and when to not use his martial arts. Like,
sure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It was Mr. like a Nuff weird,
just
like,
challenged
moral.
Him and he was like, no.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, so he went bowed down to, like, you know, kiss the shoes or whatever. Like, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know if it was because his group didn't look like they were ready to fight, like, behind him.
I think it was, yeah, I think it was, like, the difference, like, why he would fight the thugs that are trying to kidnap Vanity, but he'll kiss Shonuff's shoes.
Yeah, it was a weird little, like, on the struggle.
I think I understand, like, on one hand with Vanity, like, he's protecting someone. Like, that's sure. what you use your stuff for, is to, like, be mm-hmm. a protector and help others. But with Shonuff, it would just be to prove something. Like, that was the only reason that he wanted to fight him. He was challenged, and the only reason he would fight this guy is to prove that he can. And that wasn't enough, or that was against his teaching or something. Like, I think that's what they were going for. Whether or not they explained that very well is another another question.
That's another conversation completely.
Yeah. That was my headcanon with that. I was just like,
okay.
And with what I know of like, you know, you win 100%, you win 100% of the fights that you're not in. Like that kind of thought.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. I'm with you. But do you win them with the rice hat is the real question.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Oh boy.
You could use it as a weapon.
He could. I wanted lightning to come out of it.
The fortune cookie guy stole that from him. He never got it back.
That's no fair.
Well, he must have had another one though, because he was wearing it later. Like, okay. He was wearing it after.
Okay.
And he never confronted them. So, like,
he's got a whole closet full of those things.
Yeah, he opens it up. And they're all stacked on top of each other.
Yeah.
It's time now for final judgment. Are you ready to rubber stamp this bitch? Here's the final judgment.
Okay. Those that are watching, they probably won't be affected because I'm going to have control over this, but you have to understand why we just reacted. I pressed the button for final judgment and Chris and Bradley switched screens. Like mm-hmm. Bradley was in the middle.
You and Bradley just switched screens for me.
Okay. All right. It was weird.
That's bizarre.
So Bradley's now on the right. Mm-hmm. He was in the middle. Mm-hmm. And Chris, you were on the right. It's just like a weird thing. Like hey, what? Like the moment I pressed it.
Weird. Okay.
So anyways, now is the point of the show where we talk about how well the movie holds up today. It's about fact, not opinion. Or opinion. Not fact. It's up to you.
Either way, whatever.
It really doesn't matter because nothing's final about it. It's all opinion. All right, here we go. Well, let's go with Chris because you are the first out the gate, and then we'll end with Bradley because, like, you know, he's it's mm-hmm. it's the yin to his yang. Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. Indeed.
Yeah. I don't think it holds up. I think the flavor of this movie is kind of gone by the wayside. I think if people are going to watch kung fu movies, they're going to watch, like, there's more kung fu in Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings than this movie, and it's going to be more exciting. So the kung fu in and of itself wasn't that exciting. It's dripping with the 80s, so the stakes of this movie are getting a video played on an MTV rotation, which isn't a thing anymore, so that's gonzo. I just think the vibe of this movie is, as I mentioned a couple of times, it has a drive-in vibe. You know what I mean? It's the second film of a feature, and it's not supposed to be Oscar award-winning or super awesome, I think. But if you dig that B-movie drive-in vibe, you're into it, and that vibe is gonzo. That does not exist anymore, except by independent filmmakers on YouTube. But it's not a feature anymore. So for those reasons, I would say no, it doesn't hold up. So I'm gonna say that there. Jason, where are you at?
Okay, so I don't think it does, except for the cult people, meaning, like, there's got to be a cult following with this for those that saw it back then and have like it's a special place in their heart. So mm-hmm. they're going to watch it and not see, or even if they see something wrong, they're still going to like talk about how much they love it. Mm-hmm. And like, for instance, you and is it, did you say your girlfriend or wife? Sorry.
Oh, my wife. Oh, yeah. Right. My wife liked it.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, my wife.
It's not, I forget. My wife. Like, you know, like
my wife, Sarah. Yeah.
No. Not yeah. my bad yeah. on not knowing, but, so like you said she enjoyed it. That usually happens when the person who's already enjoying it gets to sit there and go, yes, but look, you know what I mean? Like sometimes, yeah. or, you know, or it's just because the two of you are similar. So like there, mm-hmm. I see that crowd enjoying this and keeping with it. I have, like, for instance, when I was a kid, I was 12 years old. I saw the movie Breaking. I know it's terrible.
Bad.
I know it is. However, I loved it so much then, it holds such a place in my heart that I refuse to like to bash it. Like, you know what sure. I mean? Like, I will watch mm-hmm. it even today mm. and go, yeah, I know, I see it,
mm-hmm. yeah.
but
yeah.
I love it anyway. Like, mm-hmm. so I wholeheartedly get that. You know what I mean? Like, it's this didn't have it for me because I didn't have that special bond with it. But that doesn't mean I don't understand. I totally get it. And I think with that group, it holds up completely, but everything else, it really does feel like the, you know, unless, yes, I love the 80s. However, like, you know, she had like a point, the Cyndi Lauper girl had a pointy triangle sticking out of her hat. It was like a hat or something, mm-hmm. right? It was almost like, you know how like every time they want to show you this is the 80s channel. They'll put like a triangle that's mm-hmm. neon in the back, like in these weird like shapes.
Yeah.
Like not only do you have sunglasses, but you have sunglasses that are like shaped like, mm-hmm. like that are going towards the moon for some weird reason. But like, so like, it was like, and, like for instance, Show Enough, he had
sunglasses those glasses.
With that are like vertical blinds or not vertical, like you know, horizontal blinds. So it's
the
like
Japanese flag in the middle.
Right. And you could almost look at like, you know, he's representing karate. Bruce Leroy is representing kung fu. So it's just kind of, no, but like I'm saying the 80s references, it's almost like they took everything that wasn't going to remain.
Yeah,
like cool.
All the stuff like, that could know, like, age, like you know stuff I mean? In like, one movie,
but it gets used as the proof that it's an 80s channel or an 80s look. You know, like mm-hmm. it's just kind of funny how it all seemed mm-hmm. to be in one package.
Yeah,
but no, it doesn't for those reasons because it doesn't. It really feels like it's you know branded with like whatever was you know from 1985. But like I said, anyone who loved it then, I can absolutely see why they still hold on to it dearly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is what it is. I will say it is what it is. And it's hard to say that this is a, you know, a skillfully crafted and good movie because of all the metrics, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that might be a little bit because of the genre that they were kind of, it's an over the top silly genre. So
sure.
A lot of it is over the top and silly. I also think Berry Gordy was trying to sell records. So a good 20 minutes of the movie is questionable music videos. Mm-hmm. But I had a blast watching it and I warned my wife going in, showed her a picture of Show Enough. I was like, this is what this movie is. And she's like, no, put it on the TV. I'll watch it with you. And then like halfway through, she's like, this is so much fun. And I think one of the reasons is I looked a little bit into the production and what people thought of it, like while making it. And they all had a great time. Like it was a good set. All the people that made this movie were loving life while they made it. And I really think it kind of oozes out. Like even like it's very silly and you have to really suspend all of your disbelief. But just like, I don't know, once I just sort of like, what you got? Like, come at me with your 80s. Hit me with your best shot movie. I had a blast with it. And I think it's because everyone there just like seemed to have, you know, be relaxed and happy and goofing off. It's, yeah. So I would recommend you watch it, but just know you're not watching. This is what it is.
I think my problem too, and just so I don't sound like I never have any fun, is that my wife and I are currently watching. And again, I want to know why people like stuff. Doesn't mean I'm going to suddenly agree, but I want to know, like, what is your deal with the movie? I want to know, like, it's important to me what you think. It's not going to change how I feel about it, but so I always come across this is silly. I can't, whatever. I often say things don't hold up, but also let's put some context. My wife and I I already had some, but I figured I'd finish the collection of all of Chris Nolan's movies. Right. And I have them on my shelf in order of release date. And we're working our way through them. Now, not all at once, because that would take like a week and a half. But like every now and then, I'm going to put one on. I'm going to watch them in order. And the night before, I had never seen the movie Memento. You ever seen Memento? Oh, messed up. Mm-hmm. It's genius. Like, I never saw it. I didn't even know what it was about. And then you watch it and he was screwing around with the movie plays forwards and backwards. And it's all kinds of shit. And my wife and I are watching it. At the end, we're just stunned. I'm like, that was magnificent. I'm like, I'm always thirsty for an original story with movies because I know how hard it is to come up with an original idea. And Memento blew me away as an idea of like, oh my God, I've never seen anything like that. And then next morning I had to watch The Last Dragon. So it's like, I'm set up for, you know what I mean? Like, so maybe I'm not saying I thought Last Dragon was going to be up to Memento. But it's just like, maybe
it was a weird double feature.
Oh my God. Like, my mind was completely like, I had to really dig into Memento and I had to hang on every word so I knew what the fuck was going on. And then here comes Shownuff. And I'm like, what is happening?
Hey, tonight at the drive-in.
Yeah, I know.
We got Memento.
Memento.
Followed by The Last Dragon. Oh my God. All you see is like a couple of cars and like red just paints just red paints every windshield from all their heads exploding from what the hell just happened. They have idea. Yeah.
So anyway.
Any art is like food, you know, like sometimes, you can have a gourmet mac and cheese with like the best cheese and the most expensive, and it's baked by a really good chef and it's beautiful. And then sometimes I just want a box of Kraft macaroni and cheese.
And I don't know,
ketchup on it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is Memento is definitely the gourmet macaroni and cheese. Yes. And The Last Dragon is the store brand.
Yeah. It's chasing. Oh, God.
Hold on. Knock off. Crap. Yeah. Like, it's not even crap.
Aldi.
Yeah.
The Aldi, like Aldi mac and cheese.
Yeah.
It's carved. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, boy.
All right. It's like, yeah. You know,
But sometimes that's what you want.
No, that's fine. But I get Chris, though, because what I'm saying is I get where Chris is coming from in the sense that if you just had the pampered chef, like everything being perfect, you had the chef's table, Gordon Ramsay himself made the food for you. And then the next day you're like, I can only afford McDonald's.
Can I pop an Elio's pizza in my toaster oven right now? Would that be okay?
McCain Elio's. Holy shit. All right. No, so, but listen, first off, I want to thank you for being here, Bradley. This has been great. And hopefully you weren't bothered by us.
You're great. It was been super fun. I wouldn't have picked it. If I was protective of it or precious, whatever.
Let me check real quick and play. I can play it through here, I think. So here is, I'm going to start with, I had said, listen, here's the deal. We're doing a podcast. Can you make like a small intro for us? It doesn't have to be long, like a whole song. You know, like I sent him the example of How Did This Get Made? How they have a theme song that's like, I don't know, however, 20 seconds or whatever. So like, just to have an idea that here's like a, you know, what we're kind of looking for roughly. It doesn't have to be like this, but you know what I mean? Like, here's something that represents something. So here is like a couple of things that he tooled around with. And we also have the original, his first like draft of our theme song, which like I heard that first, fell in love with it. So everything else was like, yeah, this is great, but I love that other one.
Yeah.
So
here's the demos.
Yeah. So here they are. I figured it'd be cool to let people know how, you know, the creative process and stuff like that. So this one says Film Cricket Manic No Vocals. Here we go.
It's just programmed on GarageBand, I think.
Yeah.
All right. And for demos, I would just do it like program it on my computer and not fuss about. Just, what do you think of this?
That's cool.
But yeah, definitely some you know 16 Super Nintendo racing game.
Vibes. Yeah. So that was awesome. And then this one says Film Cricket's Rockin' No Vocals.
Okay. I don't remember any of these.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah. And then
a voice box under that.
Here, it says Film Cricket's Swingy with Vocals demo. So this is the first draft before he had gotten together with Brian. So this is all you.
Yep. Film Cricket's chirping about movies. We're putting two thumbs up and we rub them together. Make a sound that sounds like what we think about the movies.
Yeah. It's catchy as fuck.
What was that?
It's catchy as fuck.
Oh, thank you. See, yeah.
It's catchy as fuck. Jesus.
Yeah.
It reminds me a little of You Made It Weird. Ever hear the You Made It Weird podcast with Pete Holmes?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same vibe as that. It's an absolute earworm. And it's the same kind of earworm. It just kind of stays in there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've had other people. And by the way, we at the beginning, we didn't play the whole song. It's because we've now morphed it to the end. Because it's like sometimes... Because not only would we play the song, but then our friend Steve would come in and announce who's on the show. And that's like a minute plus. Like, so I was like, you know what? The attention span just of this world.
Yeah.
Let me just like we'll play them doing the vocals and then the background music. And then I will end with the song. Like it's there on both sides.
It's a good choice.
Like, holy shit. When I first heard that, I was like, we're gonna have this. And then you said Brian's gonna come and they like joined. So like, I mean, you have mandolin in there and everything.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm playing everything on it. I'm not positive. That's mandolin. I was in a bluegrass band with Brian and our dad for a while called No Spare Parts. I'm one of those people that has five different instruments that I can play kind of okay. I'm probably best at drums, and I can sound like I know what I'm doing on quite a few things. But mandolin is one of the main ones.
Well, it sounds great.
So, well, thank you so much, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Hope you had fun. You know what? We have to come up with another date. And I think you guys want a movie that's a kung fu chasey movie that's going to be fun to make fun of?
Sure, what?
Besides Surf Ninjas?
I'm saying this in advance. I'm like, you're like,
yeah.
I'm hoping not to like insult him already right out the gate.
Oh, no.
But there's a movie that I was hoping, How Did This Get Made would do it, and they still haven't, as far as I know. It's called No Retreat, No Surrender.
Okay.
So bad.
Okay.
It is so bad that it's fun. Like, because it's, you're going to laugh like crazy a lot, like watching this. So I say we do that. It'll be a blast. sure. All right, everybody.
Awesome.
That's our show. And I'd like to thank Bradley for being here. And we miss Melanie. Hopefully everybody's feeling well. And thank you, Chris. And hey, movies may not. Oh, let's. This is the part where I'm supposed to say. We'd like to thank Steve Lavoie for our vocal imaging and Draco and the Malfoys for our theme song. So this is what I say that every week. If you know, if all the planets are lined up, and usually it is. And movies may not age like fine wine, but we drink it anyway. Bye. About movies.